So now I want to finally talk about the change of basis problem. I only had a few minutes to talk about last time, just a warming up. Okay, so let's think relatively concretely there. Let's think R2, so the plane, so there's the standard basis. We use E1 and E2 to represent it. I don't know how that tradition got started using E's. Maybe E is for elementary. But there are many other bases. How about this one? That's a basis. If you draw them kind of like this, this one looks very oblique, right? It's got a, one of them goes up, at kind of, this one, if you graph it, it looks like an arrow with a slope of 2 over 1. This one, if you graph it, it looks like an arrow that's longer, but it has this, less of a slope, just 4 over 3. So kind of like this. Here is R3, which is harder to graph, but oh well. Let's pick some orientation here. Let's draw it this way. We have a standard basis, which somewhat confusingly, I'm using the same symbols as I did over there. That's the tradition. If you don't like using E's to represent the different things depending on context, just I'm using an E, you use a different letter, F, or whatever you want. And, of course, we can imagine lots of other bases. I mean, in two dimensions, as long as the arrows don't lie on the same line, they're going to span all of two-dimensional space, right? And if there's only two of them, there won't be any redundancy. So it's a basis. Similarly, in 3D, as long as all three of your arrows aren't lying in a single plane, then three arrows will make a basis. If you had four arrows, then there'd be some redundancy, but three arrows not all lying in a plane will be a basis. It'll span all of R3, but if you take away any of the vectors, it won't anymore. So here's a simple one. I'll use different letters for this one, though. V1, how about this? It's terribly complicated. I put this one on the test. This is a basis, but it's not orthogonal, for example. So this one is just E1 again. This one has a, this one is really E1 plus E2. So it goes there, it goes this way, and then it goes that way. So I guess I'll try and add the arrow that way. E1 plus E2. And then you've got this one, which has E1 plus E2 plus E3. So this one, I'm imagining V2 is kind of coming out this way or something, and then I'm going to have to go back up. I'm not sure how best to draw it. Something like that. It's kind of, it's coming out of the board, but it's got a positive Z part to it. I'm really not sure the best way to draw it. Maybe you could argue that since it's got a positive Z part, it really should be pointing up like this. That one's a little hard to see. But they're kind of drawing it at perspective. The anyways, they don't all lie in the same plane. You can tell because if you had something times V1 plus something times V2, say, you could never get it to add up to V3 because there's always zeros in the bottom for these, even after you multiply them by numbers and add them together. And you can, it's a little bit trickier, but you can also prove that, you know, if you take like V2 and V3, you can never multiply them by numbers and get them to add up to V1 either, nor could you have V1 and V3 multiplied by numbers and add up to V2. And kind of the mechanical way to do it, right, is to put them all into a big matrix, take the reduced row echelon form, observe that there are three pivot columns, right, and three echelon rows, so then you know you've got a basis. Anyways, we have our bases. So I want to consider a transformation here. And what's it going to do? It is going to take, first we'll consider a transformation that goes from R2 to R3. Okay, so using the standard bases for R2 and R3, the matrix, I'll call it K of T, is what? Well, you take your first thing, right, apply your transformation to the first standard input basis element and then to the second one. And the outputs are the columns of your matrix. And right, because this column here, the first column vector, right, it'll be 3 tall because we're going from 2-dimensional inputs to 3-dimensional outputs. 3 rows, 2 columns. Its x components and y components and z components are just exactly what you get when you're talking about the coordinate vector in terms of the standard basis. Okay, no surprise there. Very explicitly, okay, remember in terms of the standard basis. This in 2 dimensions and 3 dimensions. But I want to consider cooking up other possible linear transformations. Instead of just, what if I don't know these from the start? If these are given, great, or if there's a formula that allows me to compute them, great, then I can get the matrix for it. But with linear algebra, many parts of linear algebra don't really care about which basis you use. When you get into stuff involving angles, and you start caring about things like orthogonal bases, stuff like that, then there is a distinction. Some bases are better than others. But a lot of parts of the theory, any basis is as good as any other. And if I tell you, using these two bases, coordinate vectors in terms of this output basis, say, for the transforms of these, then that should be able to tell you the whole transformation. Okay, so let's say that I tell you that I transform 1, 2 into, say, 1 V1 minus 1 V2. And I tell you that I transform T U2. So I transform U2 into T U2. And let's say I make it one V2 plus five V3. All right. So we could have a matrix for T in terms of these totally different bases. Take the transformed input and its coordinate vectors would be 1, negative 1, and then 0, right? This has nothing on the third basis element, but in the output. And then here, it's going to be 0, 1, 5. So let's call this matrix H, okay? Then what I'd like to do, if I have something in some matrix for the transformation, but it's in terms of some weird basis, it'd be nice if I could turn it back and understand what it does in terms of nicer basis. That's one problem. There are other problems you can solve with change of basis. Sometimes you have a complicated, ugly-looking matrix in the standard basis, but if you would switch to a other basis, the matrix would suddenly look really nice. And later on in the course, we will talk about applications of that nature. I may have time to talk about one such application today. First, here's an example of the first kind of application I mentioned. Given a matrix of a transformation in terms of a weird basis, can we recover the matrix in terms of the standard basis? Some references here. Keep some of the stuff to refer to. I'm going to
about it in a way where I have... We want to know, you know, what is what is the output when you feed a standard basis input to T? So the idea is we know something here, and we need it. Describe this to see. So here's my idea. I would like to have U1 and U2 represented as some numbers. Other way around. There. I already have U1 and U2 represented, okay? Like if you write U1 and U2 as just columns in a matrix, right, that looks like this, okay? Like that. And let's call this matrix A. Now, you could think of this as itself being a transformation, right? You think of the matrix itself here is doing a transformation. It transforms E1 into U2 and E2, or E1 into U1, E2 into U2. Okay. Now I'm going to form the inverse matrix. I got my little formula there. I could do the reduced row echelon form of this matrix adjoined with an identity matrix, but it's faster if I just borrow that formula there. I don't memorize the 3x3 inverse formula, but I can memorize the 2x2 one. So it's like 1 times 4 minus 2 times 3. Well, 3 times 2. Not that it matters much. Committed. Okay. This is 4 minus 6, so I'm really dividing by -2 there. So this would be -2, 3/2, 1, -1/2. But what does this mean? Well, we can interpret it as a transformation. It should undo this transformation. And if you want, you can actually check that. So, for example, let's look at what happens to 1, 2. This going to be? It's going to be the first column times 1 plus the second column times 2. So -2 times 1 is -2. Then I add 3/2 times 2, so 3. So -2 plus 3. And over here I have 1 times 1, and then I have -1/2 times 2, which is -1. So I indeed get 1, 0, which is E1, just like it's supposed to be. What does this have to do with that? Now, now that we have this formula here, we can use it now to get a handle on this thing. So, so on one hand, we have this matrix, right? It says things like this. Okay. Now, my idea now is I want to express I want to express E1 as a combination of U1 and U2. And this matrix here gives me exactly what I need. Okay. So you can kind of see it here, right? See what we did here. It was 1 and 2, right? I claim actually you can just read it off the column here. See, right here, negative 2 in there. What I'm going for is this thing. Let's see if I got that right. Check, right? Negative 2 times 1, 2, right? Plus 3, 4. And you can check this. Negative 2 times 1 is negative 2, plus 3 is 1. Negative 2 times 2 is negative 4, plus 4 is 0. Okay? And similarly, right here, this column tells you about U2. It tells you that it's 3 halves U1 minus 1 half U2. And you can check that. So this is another interpretation of this matrix. Right? On the one hand, you can see those it turns U1 into E1 and it turns U2 into E2. But you can also read off, right, from the columns themselves coefficients here. So look at this. 3 halves times 1 is 3 halves. Minus a half times 3, that's 0. Look at this. 3 halves times 2 is 3. Minus a half times 4, so minus 2. 3 minus 2 is 1.
These are really true.
And this shouldn't be super mysterious because it's actually in symmetry with something we saw before. I'll try to make this slightly less surprising. Look here at the original matrix A. 1 in the 2, 3 in the 4 in the columns. What is U? It's 1 times E1 plus 2 times E2. So that matches the 1 and the 2. And U2 is 3 times E1 plus 4 times E2. Probably have to go to the other board to get some more room for the next part, but we can describe this a little more abstractly. What's all this numerical stuff telling us? Okay. So if say you started with a vector in the U1, U2 basis, okay? Like you started with, say, U1. So it's just 1, 0, the coordinate vector in the U basis. And then you wanted to recover the vector in the standard basis. Well, you turn the U1, which you're representing by just 1, 0, into 1, 2. If you had if you had another vector of U1 plus U2, that would be 1, 1 in the U basis. But in the standard basis, it would be 1 plus 3, which is 4, and then in the bottom entry, 2 plus 4, which is 6. And the idea is that transformation, we're not really changing the actual vector, we're just changing the coordinate system. So you have the identity transformation. It doesn't do anything. Now, what the matrix A is doing, you can think of it as representing a transformation, a trivial transformation, but the input basis and output basis are different. Example of this. So U1 plus U2, I said this verbally, right? Okay. That's the underlying vector. The identity transformation, right, it doesn't do anything to it, okay? So all we're really doing is representing it in two different ways, okay? So here's its coordinate vector in the input basis. It's just going to be 1 U1 and 1 U2, right? And here's the coordinate vector in the output basis. in the standard basis, we know U1 is 1, 2, and U2 is 3, 4. 1 plus 3 is 4, 2 plus 4 is 6. Okay? 4, 6. And that exactly matches the matrix multiplication. Here's 1, 2, first column, 3, 4, second column. And here's the 1, 1. Now do the multiplication. You get 1 times the first column plus 1 times the second column, which is the 4, 6. Okay.
So normally we think of a matrix as changing stuff, you know, to input a vector, output a different vector. But you can also think of a matrix as not changing the underlying vector, but just changing the representation of the vector. Okay, that's the abstraction. The same vector now has different representations. We're talking about going between them. Oh, A inverse is the same thing. Okay. It's just going to have the input and output roles reversed. Okay, just as this matrix takes you from U coordinates to standard coordinates, A inverse will take you back from standard coordinates to the funny U basis coordinates. Now the input basis is actually the standard coordinates, and the output basis is the standard basis, now output basis U1, U2, which corresponds to the funny coordinate system, right? So starting here, about 4E1, okay? Okay, so what's its... the coordinate vector in the input basis, which is now what we use for our standard coordinate system, is not surprising. It's just 4, 0. Okay, 4, 0. And then we have our coordinate vector in the output basis. I'm not even sure what that is, I think. But I sort of have previewed the answer, right? I told you that E1 is negative 2 times U1 plus U2. I told you that it corresponds to the numbers here in the inverse matrix, the negative 2 and the 1. And I verbally checked the arithmetic on that. Okay, so if that's right, then I should multiply that by 4, and I should get negative 8 U1 plus 4 U2. Okay, but if I didn't know that, I could still find it, assuming I have A inverse. So here we go. Let's do the matrix multiplication. So there's our A inverse matrix. The first column is negative 2, 1. The second column is 3 halves, negative 1 half. And now I'm going to multiply by 4, 0. Okay, what does that do? 4 times the first column, 0 plus 0 times the second column. That's exactly what I had to do. So I think with all that, we can put together a solution to our problem now.
sir.
Okay. Okay, so. So, if we have matrix K here, right? So here's how we should think of it. We have R2 with basis E1, E2. We have our matrix K, which is supposed to send us to R3 with the standard 3D basis. E1, E2, E3. Okay. Now, I'm going to break this up into pieces now, okay? So, this is supposed to be the same as going, I mean, it's supposed to be the same transformation, right? Just different coordinate systems. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have be extra clear, we have matrix K, the transformation is T. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to break it up into steps. Okay. And so my first step will be to go from the basis. Go from the standard basis, right, to the weird basis. Okay, and I'm not going to change the vectors. Right? So the transform is just going to be the identity transform. Okay? So I'm not changing anything there. The underlying vectors won't change, just the coordinate system. So we're in a different basis now, U1, U2. And so the matrix, as we saw, will be the A inverse over there. Now, I do the transformation, right? But the matrix is, and the matrix is going to be that matrix H here, okay? Because this one has input basis U1 and U2. And it gives me an output basis in terms of the V's, right? And finally, I need one more matrix. I'll call it B. It's not hard to see what it is. Which is going to take me, I need another matrix to take me back to the standard basis. Okay, so recall here that A was just U1 and U2 in their standard coordinates, you know, just put together, column next to column, right? And A takes you from weird basis to standard basis, right? We saw that on that board over there. A inverse takes you from standard basis to weird basis. Okay, now likewise in 3D, the matrix B that I want to go from weird basis to standard basis is just the vectors put together, right? One column next to another column. So if you put all this together, now you can have a matrix that works. Okay. Now the trick is you have to remember the to read from right to left now.
when you write down your, or maybe I should say write from right to left, okay? So how do, what do we start with some vector here, right? Say I have vector W, okay? So we're going to do a transformation of K of W. It's going to be something, right? Some, it's going to give me some 3D vector, right? And how do we do the transformation? Well, first we apply A inverse to W. Then we apply H. Then we apply B. So I'm writing it backwards, okay? Because you write the matrices as acting from the left, right? First, this is applied to W, then this is applied to W, then this is applied to W. Okay. And so that's how you can change the basis. And so we can put all this together, right? The big matrix multiplication here. So here's first matrix from the left now. That's just these vectors glued together. Okay, so this is a 3x3 matrix. We're going to multiply it by this 3x2 matrix here as the original matrix we used to define the transformation. And then finally, we need A inverse. Which we got over there. And now we got to do some work here, right? Okay. So let's do some matrix multiplication. A bit of practice that, right? Okay, so first, let's multiply these two matrices, okay? Okay, so this is a 3x3. This is 3x2. So the product will be 3x2. Three rows, three columns. Three rows, two columns. It's the number of rows on the left matrix and the number of columns on the right matrix that tell you the dimensions of the product matrix. Okay. So we'll get something here, and then we'll have to multiply by this thing. Okay, so to get, say, this entry, right? The entry in the first row and the first column of this matrix, we have to do the dot product of the first row of the left matrix with the first column of that matrix. So 1 times 1, 1 times negative 1, 1 times 0, adds up to 0. Okay, let's do the first column, second row, first column. Okay, so second row, dot product, first column. So 0 times 1, 1 times negative 1, 1 times 0, adds up to negative 1. 0 times 1, 0 times negative 1, 1 times 0, adds up to 0. Okay, now let's do the second column. Okay. First row of left matrix, which is B, now second column of the middle matrix, which is H. Okay, so 1 times 0, 1 times 1, 1 times 5, adds up to 6. Now, second row, second column. Second row, dot product of second column. 0 times 0, 1 times 1, 1 times 5, because that's also 6. Okay, and then finally, third row, second column. 0 times 0, 0 times 1, 1 times 5. As it is. And we're almost done. Now I should do one more matrix multiplication. Okay, so this time it's a 3x2 by a 2x2. So
the product matrix will be 3 by 2. In terms of linear transformations, this is a transformation here. This right matrix goes from 2D to 2D, and then this transformation goes from 2D to 3D. So the final matrix, so the composite transformation goes from 2D to 3D. Let's start with the first row, first column. Okay, so first row, dot product of first column. 0 times -2, 6 times 1. Adds up to 6. Okay, let's say I do first row, second column now. Okay, 0 times 3/2, 6 times -1/2. Adds up to -3. Okay, second row, first column. -1 times -2, 6 times 1. Adds up to 10. Second row, second column. -1 times 3/2, 6 times -1/2. So -3/2 and -3, I think. So -3/2, -6/2, -9/2 altogether. And 0 times -2, 5 times 1, will add to 5 in the third row, first column. And then 0 times 3/2 and 5 times -1/2 would be -5/2 in the third row, second column. Okay, so that, so what this means then is, so we can finally interpret, we can answer some questions asked. Like we can say that T, that's the original transformation applied to, say, E1, is just this first column. And T applied to, I'm running out of room here. Should write that. Yeah. Okay, so maybe I'll just label it. Okay. So the first column is the transformed E1. The second column is the transformed E2. Okay. So that's how you go from the weird coordinates back to the standard coordinates. In the original coordinate systems for the input and output spaces R2 and R3, we had this matrix describing the transformation. And back in standard coordinates, we were able to recover this matrix. And, of course, if the dimensions were higher, the matrix multiplication and especially the matrix inversion can get pretty tedious. So you can use your calculator to multiply matrices. You can use your calculator to find inverse matrices when they exist. Okay. Yes?
Wouldn't the 10 be an
8? Well, that's a reasonable question. Let's see. Looks like 8 to me. Thank you. That's another reason to use the calculator, right? At least if you're me. Any other questions or comments? There's a lot to it, but a lot of it was me trying to explain what it all meant. Right? A lot of the underlying computations and the concluding formulas are not, you know, going to fill a whole book of notes, right? And the bottom line was that BHA inverse formula, right? So. We can try and put some kind of summary of all this. So, summary and kind of generalizer, right? So, given input basis, I'll write letters. I'll try to write the letters matching what I had there. So, U1 through UN, okay. Rn and output basis V1 through Vm of Rm and matrix H for T linear transformation according to these bases. T has matrix K equals, so it's going to be BH inverse. So the B corresponds to the matrix made up by all the output basis vectors. Then you just have your matrix H, and then here you have your inverse matrix. Inverse of the input. So if I tell you a transformation according to some weird bases, then you can recover it. The matrix according to the original basis.
How do you get the H is just those like flip?
Let's use this board. So what is H, right? So H is, right? In our example over here, it's just from the coefficients. I told you that the first input basis was input basis element was transformed into 1 times the first output basis minus 1 times the second output basis element, right? So that gave me this column 1, negative 1, 0 here. And then here I told you that the second input basis element was transformed into 1 times the second output basis element plus 5 times the third output basis element. So that resulted in the 0, 1, 5 column. Okay? So we need to know something about the transformation. And the something was those numbers given there. Okay? So the ith vector there is the ith input basis element is equal to some numbers. Some numbers times the output basis vectors. then that tells you the ith column of your matrix H there. So you just have to read off the coefficients. So that's how you know what the H is. You have to start from something. So if you're given things in some basis, then figure it out. Okay. Other questions or comments? Yes.
When you're doing all this procedures here, are you all talking about the same vectors U1 and U2?
From the moment I wrote down U1 and U2 today, those are the same. But I mean, okay, here it's more general, right?
Yes, I see that.
Yeah.
I see U1, U2, etc. until UN.
Well, you can imagine this being higher dimensional, right? In this example, N is 2. So it stops here. Right? And N is 3. It stops there, right? But you could in my example, the N there is 2 and the N is 3, but the procedure generalizes to any input dimension and any output dimension. In this example, it's two-dimensional input, three-dimensional output. But I wanted, instead of writing 2 and 3 over there, I wrote N and M to emphasize that the procedure works in general.
Okay, when you were lecturing right now, I caught it all real simple. It sounded really, really neat. But now I followed you through and I look at this again, I totally forgot what I saw.
Well, see the formula? BHA inverse, right? BHA inverse, okay?
Okay, inverse.
And if you read from right to left, here's what we're doing. We're doing a coordinate change, but not changing the vectors. Then we change the vectors. Then we do another coordinate change. Okay. So you have to read the matrices from right to left, right? Coordinate change, actual transformation, in this case from 2D to 3D, and then another coordinate change. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw now. I see what I saw now.
Pictures of everything, and I'm recording everything I'm saying, so you can review it.
You don't have to do that now.
And, if you get any linear algebra book from the library that's worth anything, it'll tell you how to do change of bases as well, and it'll tell you the same thing I told you, maybe with different letters, but you're going to see the same formula.
Okay. Okay. I hate to read.
Well, that's what they pay me for, to talk to people that hate to read. Okay. Now I got it. So I made up an example, but it was pretty arbitrary, right? Who cares about this arbitrary weird made up transformation? What about something a little more, say, geometrically motivated? Okay? So let's say we're in 3D, all right? And here I want to think about another vector, right in the midst of everything, coming out here, kind of like this. So I want to show you how to figure out the rotation matrix for rotations about any axis, okay? I'm going to call this, how about I call it A for axis, okay? So I'm thinking negative E1 plus E2 plus E3, just for example, right? The point is we can find the rotation about any axis, okay? And I want to ask, okay, I'm going to do some rotation here, okay? Let's be concrete. Let's say that theta is 30 degrees, okay? So you can kind of imagine let's call this whole transformation T, okay? There's one little ambiguity here. Are we going to rotate clockwise or counterclockwise, right? And what does that mean, right? Let's just not worry about that for now. Right? Okay. Let's just see if we can get a matrix that does the rotation either one way or the other, right? Okay. I mean, if we figure it out and the matrix seems to rotate things the wrong way, then we'll just take the inverse of that matrix and it'll rotate the opposite way. Okay? Okay, so let's see if we can figure this out. Okay, so what I want to do is I'm going to have this be the start of a new basis, okay? And what I'm going to do is I'm going to cook up the rest of a basis such that it's orthogonal, right? I mean, this is definitely not going to be orthogonal if I just randomly put E2 and E3 on it or E1 and E2 on it, but there should be some basis out there. Right? Where they're all orthogonal with each other, right? Which of course is hard to picture in 3D. Sorry. Okay. So how do I get this? Basically, I need to pick two more vectors from the starting basis, such that they don't all lie in the same plane. In this particular example, any of the other two will work, right? So we just use two of these original standard basis elements to make kind of a starting basis. E2, that's fine. And V3 can be E3, that'll work. You can check, once you put these into a matrix, that
they are indeed in reduced row echelon form going to have three pivot columns, three echelon rows. So this will be a basis. Okay? And then we find an orthogonal basis. So U1 is itself, right? Nothing there, nothing new there. Then for V2, we need to remove the part of U2, right? To build up U2, from V2, we have to remove the part of it that is parallel to U1, okay? That's the projection, right? So that's V2 dot U1 over U1 dot U1. Okay. So that'll make U2 perpendicular to U1. That's just the orthogonal projection, as it's called. And then we need U3 to be perpendicular to both of the previous ones. So we're going to take V3, and we're just going to take away the stuff that's the part of it parallel to U1 and the part of it parallel to U2. Write that a little lower. So this we've done before. We're just getting an orthogonal basis from a non-orthogonal basis. Using the dot product formulas we've used for projections, as always. Okay. Now there's one little hiccup. Still my plan here. The remaining problem I have is that if you rotate stuff, a circle around the axis should still be a circle, right? But if you do a scale change, a circle could get stretched out to be an ellipse, not a circle, right? And so we have to fix the scale change problem. So we do one more thing, okay, which is we work with the unit vectors. So now what we get is something even nicer, which we'll talk more about next time. It's called an orthonormal basis. Meaning it's orthogonal and all the vectors have magnitude 1. And so, finally, if you put all this together, what is your matrix of T? Okay. Well, what we're going to have to do is Just like we had the BHA inverse formula, we're going to have a similar formula here. But here, this time, we're going to work in the W basis.
Okay.
And so what we're going to do, the A inverse will take us from the standard basis to the W basis. Then we'll actually do the rotation in the W basis. And then we'll go back to the standard basis. Okay. So this is the last step. So where what? So where? So A is the just the vectors W. Okay. Column by column, just put them together. Okay. And so the first thing is just you're not changing the underlying vector, you're just going to change your coordinate system. Then that's our interpretation of A inverse. Then H will be a matrix that we interpret as actually doing a 30-degree rotation, okay, in the W basis. Both input and output will be in the W basis. Then we go back from the W basis to the standard basis when multiplying by matrix A. Okay. So what is H then? So you want to think of it as in the W basis, well, this arrow here is parallel to A, right? Because it's just going to be A divided by... if you look at this thing, it has magnitude root 3. So it's actually just... your vector A there divided by root 3. So it's nothing mysterious. It's just the same, it's going to give you the same axis of rotation. But now pretend that was the x-axis and think about those formulas I gave you on day 18. How do you rotate about the x-axis? It's like this. So, as you may have guessed or as you may have feared, this is your homework project, right? Yeah. Okay. Brings together several things that we've done previously. Orthogonal bases, rotation matrices, and now the new thing, inverse matrices and change of basis formula. Okay. So this is a 3x3 matrix. Finding the inverse is harder. Calculator could really speed that up.
Questions or comments?
Yes?
Does it tell you the point K?
Well, it's right here, too. This is a special case of that general technique. Right?
Yeah. So, I mean, in this case, you know, here the U's and the V's are the input and output bases, but here the input and output bases are the W's, right?
This is a rotation where the input basis is in the W basis and the output is also the W in the W basis. Okay. Now the idea is you're just doing a rotation, you know, like this, right? In this coordinate system, it's easy.
Okay. How about you?
Is that clockwise? Or does it matter?
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
I won't care which one you give me, okay?
The rotation we're looking for is 30 degrees?
That's right. So you can simplify the cosine of 30 degrees to root 3 over 2 and the sine of 30 degrees to a half, right? If you can get either a clockwise or a counterclockwise one, I'll be happy. Okay. Yeah. If you want, imagine the W vectors like this. Okay. W2, W1. They're just possibly shorter or longer, in order to make them all have length 1. Okay. But if they all have length 1 and they're all at right angles with each other, then the geometry is like we usually think it is. And so a rotation really does do what you think it should do. Okay. So this is how you can do a rotation about an arbitrary line through the origin in 3D space. Okay. Through this kind of procedure. You have to change the basis and you get to a geometrically reasonable basis where one of your basis elements is along your axis of rotation. And then it's reduced to the simple case where we already know how to rotate about the x-axis. Right? Okay. I think it's time to quit.